Blog Talk Radio.
Training facility to the field with ability. Athletes are working hard, the progression is stressing. People are set some of the passion. The smell of the grass and the pain and the action. The focus, the passion, the thought of the plaque and the trophy all made out to your name. It's the money, it's the fame, it's the feeling they get when they're playing the game. What's the number on their back and the representing name? It's MJ playing way back in the day. It's glory, it's scoring. This is a story, this is Sports Nation. It's been this way for generations. Pro Sports Extra is where I get my information. Athletes with their pursuits and endeavors. Sports will entertain the whole world. It'll be this way forever. And for more of that, we going live to Trevor the Expert.
What's going on, everybody? It's Wednesday, March 13th. And always, I'll be going live with a guest here just shortly. This guest recently announced his retirement from the NFL. He started his college careers at Monmouth University, where he was a wide receiver, switched over to tight end, probably a great move for him, ended up landing with the Arizona Cardinals, the Detroit Lions, and the New York Giants, and along the way he's been doing real estate, and this is what he's doing full-time now, so let's welcome on Hakeem Vallis. How's it going, bro?
Trevor, what's going on, brother? Thanks for having me on the show.
Man, I appreciate you jumping on.
I'm sorry I got on here a little bit late. It's been a busy day. I just got back from Philadelphia.
What you doing out in Philly?
Longtime friends who are real estate investors who are doing a couple projects up and down Philly, and I was spent the day with them walking through a couple of their projects and getting to know them a little bit better and seeing if we can find some synergies for the future.
Gotcha. Awesome, bro. So what I'm going to do, seeing we kind of talk about real estate, we're going to just kind of jump back to just about the start of your life, man. When did you realize that, you know, football or sports was something that you were, like, interested in? Was it when you were young?
Oh, yeah. I've always been an athlete. My mom has always been an athlete. My mom was a track star. You know, her godbrother is Carl Lewis. Like, she grew up, you know, her 4x1 team still holds the national record at the Penn Relays. And she's like always been like that stud. But then like my brothers, we've, you know, since we were little kids, just that's what we grew up doing: football, basketball, baseball, hockey, skateboarding. It didn't matter. It was every single sport under the sun. And that's just kind of always been us.
So at what point did like the entrepreneurship start? So like for myself, you know, I started this podcast basically when I was like 13 years old. Now I'm 20. I started my first business when I was 12. And before that, I turned my bedroom into, at my dad's house, I turned it into a store. And every time his friends would come over, I'd start charging them, their friends, to like eat basically, you know? So I've always kind of had that entrepreneur mindset as well. So like, when did that start for you?
I mean, as far as back as I can remember, I remember being super young and I had an uncle of mine who was in like, he did something with the stock market. So he came over one time. So after meeting him once, I came downstairs, I had like a full suit on and like wanted to learn all about the New York Stock Exchange. Like when I was young, and that's not really entrepreneurial, but I kind of had that business mentality. But then, so when I was in,
right,
let's say fifth grade, I used to, cut grass like in the neighborhood, had my older brother driving me all around, had Craigslist ads. It was called the Green Boys Landscaping Company. It was actually named after, you ever seen the movie Major Payne?
Can't say I have.
Oh man, it's a good movie, so you won't understand the Green Boys reference. But anyway, moving forward, when I was in middle school, I used to hustle Skittles. So my mom had a Sam's Club card. So she'd go to Sam's Club. I used to get a box of wildberry purple ones of Skittles for $13. And there was 36 bags in them and sell them a dollar a piece. And my spread was $23 a box. And then like I was selling damn near two boxes a day. I would go to school with two backpacks, one filled with my books and the other filled with Skittles. And then moving forward, when I was in, good.
I was going to say, so, like, what did the teachers think at that point? Were they, like, somewhat against that? Were they, like, you guys
honestly,
selling candy and we got vending machines?
It was both ways. So,
it was both ways.
I had, yeah, I had some teachers would actually were buying Skittles from me. others were, like were cool with me. So, just, like, put that away. Don't, like, make it so obvious. And then I had to eventually stop because, like, some kids in, I think, my school were getting in trouble for, like, they were selling drugs, but they were, like, selling them, and they had drugs in candy wrappers. So, like, it was, like,
oh,
the biggest
damn.
Cool. So somebody had to ruin it for everybody. But then kind of moving forward, when I was in eighth grade, not even eighth grade. When I went to high school, I kind of put my entrepreneurial days kind of aside for a little bit. So I went to boarding school for high school. So it was very, very busy in terms of academia and athletics and all that. When I was going from boarding school into college, like my, you know, summer of going into college, my little brother had broken his iPhone 4 for like the eighth time. And like, my dad was like, I'm not fixing it anymore. And I was like, you know what? Let me see something. This is when, like, YouTube started to kind of get more hot. And I, like, YouTubed, like, how to fix an iPhone. And so I went to Amazon and bought him a screen for $30. And it took me about 6 hours to fix his phone. I was like, oh, snap. Like, it took me that long. But, like, when I pressed the power button and it was done, it worked. And I was like, oh, shit. Like,
right.
This actually worked. And I was like, all right, took my phone, like, the screen wasn't even cracked, but I just took it apart, put it back together, took it apart, put it back together, like, I mean, like, 20 times until I could do it in about 20 to 30 minutes, and literally went to school my freshman year of college and was the iPhone repair guy on campus, like, literally bought screens for $30, fixed phones for $60, and, like, I mean, I fixed, like, 3-4 phones
a
day. Got to the point where I realized that I could sell my cracked screens to a recycler in Alabama for like $5 a screen. So I'd fix the screen, then take the cracked screen, get another $5 for it. And then like another entrepreneurial like ding went off, and I took those. I went to every single iPhone repairsman's like at the mall, little stores, all in the, like the Long Branch area where I went to college, and bought their screens for $2 a pop. And then sold them for $5 a pop in this company in Alabama. So I'm looking like, I had boxes and boxes and boxes of just cracked iPhone screens at my apartment in college. And I was just flipping and flipping. And then that kind of led essentially in college, like, is when I actually started to get into real estate. Like, my major was business with a concentration in real estate. But on, like, the side, I probably flipped about 10 houses in college with my, like, ex-girlfriend's dad. He had started his own house flipping business and kind of took me under his wing, and we were flipping houses together all across North Jersey. So it was really cool getting that experience that young.
Right. So the entrepreneur thing, always been there. What made you decide, you know, I was reading up, you had a couple of offers that kind of look like your junior year of high school, you know, and then you ended up getting hurt from what I read, and you ended up going to Monmouth University. So what all went into that decision?
Well, it went into it. That was the only offer I had. After I essentially got hurt, I got hurt 2 days before my first game of my senior year. So, you know, I had a good summer, had my first scholarship going in, and, you know, Boston College, UConn, Temple, all those, shout out to all those schools who turned me down. But essentially, after I got hurt, it was, you heard, you know, it was radio silence from them, and Monmouth honored my scholarship. And I mean, I was only going to school somewhere. I was going for free, and so like that was my only opportunity that I got, and it was, you know, it was a beautiful thing.
You started off at wide receiver there. You ended up switching over to tight end. What was that transition like?
Oh, it was wild. I mean, I was a straight up bench player when I was at receiver. Like, I didn't even get to travel until like my junior year. Like, I was a nobody, and it kind of reached the point where I was, like, aware that, like, maybe, like, I don't know what's going on with football. Like, I knew I was good, and I was always just, like, busting my tail, but, like, damn, like, I just want to get my fifth year so I can get a master's for free at this point. But I knew that I wouldn't get a fifth – I wouldn't even get granted a fifth year because, like, why would they waste a fifth year a scholarship on me when I haven't really contributed anything to the team.
Right.
And then what essentially happened was somebody, one of the tight ends had gotten hurt. It was literally preseason, 9 days into camp my senior year, and I was still looking the same, looking super slow. And I was like, damn, maybe I should just move to tight end. And, like, one of my buddies, his name is Thaddeus Richards. He was a receiver at the time as well. And he was like, bro, just, like, do it. And, like, had that conversation. And then first game, had my first catch. Second game, had my first touchdown. And then started every game after that. Got granted my fifth year and made it to the league from there.
Right. During that last year, was there, like, a point in time where you were, like, maybe I got a shot at, I know you went undrafted, but was there like a time where you maybe thought there was a chance you were going to get drafted?
Drafted? No. Honestly, no. I knew I was an underdog. I knew I was very, very aware of my situation. But I knew,
right.
I knew I was good enough to go
like,
to the league.
So some people we have on, so I had like this guest on like, I don't know, like probably 2 months ago. He plays in the CFL. And he's been over there for, like, 2 years. And, like, we had a discussion, and I, like, asked him, you know, like, what's, like, next, you know? And he's like, well, there's no doubt in my mind, you know, that I'm, like, going to the NFL. And it's like sometimes, you know, people need to realize where they're at. And I, like, kind of, like, almost wanted to stop that interview and be like, I understand, like, your confidence, but, like, you to come out and say, you know, that you knew where you were at is, like, shows, like, how humble you are.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was more
yeah,
of
for
like
sure.
Really being aware and like, yeah, how it kind of went down. It's dope how I went to the Cardinals and I have literally the ultimate respect for their assistant GM, Vince Terry McDonough. He came out, like, it was, I mean, maybe a week or so before the draft. You know, Cardinals didn't come to my pro day. I didn't have any pre-draft visits or anything like that. I did my thing at the pro day. And he came out and was like, I hate every tight end in this draft, but I just got your film the other day, and I think I want to come check you out. I was like, cool. And he came out, and it was an amazing workout. We had an awesome day, awesome lunch afterwards. Him and my agents vibe, the quarterback guy who was throwing to me, he's like a quarterback coach. Everybody just kind of vibed, like, just to an unreal level. And he was just kind of kept it straight with me throughout the entire draft. Like, every day kind of gave me a call and was like, yep, you know, first day, you knew you weren't going to go, whatever, whatever. You know, third day, you know, we see you, whether it's going to be a late round pickup or you're going to go undrafted and we want you. He's like, and I'm like, all right, cool. And kind of keeping that faith. And then we hit the third day and like he's talking to me the entire time. Like the Cardinals, I don't think had a sixth round pick. I don't think they had a seventh round pick that year. And like right before the pick, he called me and was like, look, we're not going with you. We're going to defense. It wasn't my call, but it is what it is. It's one of my really good friends, Harlan Miller. They had drafted. And literally, anyway, we want you as soon as the draft ends. And then right after that, like the Redskins called my agent and was like, they were probably going to draft your guy in the seventh round. And I was like, shit. Like, I didn't want to go there, mainly because Jordan Reed was there and he had just gotten paid like all that money. And it was just like, damn,
right.
Like, that's just like, I crazy as it sounded, I was like, I really hope I don't get drafted to the Redskins.
Right.
And as soon as the draft ended, the Cardinals, they stuck to their word, and I went to the Cardinals. It was an awesome process, though.
Right. That first year, you were on the practice squad, got moved up, had a very solid season. But afterwards, after the season, the Cardinals went a different direction. Was that kind of a shock to you after, like, you know, you go undrafted and you actually had a pretty solid rookie season for, like, you know, a player that goes undrafted? So was that a shock that they went a different direction after that?
It was pretty rough. It wasn't, like, a shock. It was more rough, personally, because me and my now fiancé, we have a six-month-old daughter now. But and I really haven't talked about this much, but during that, like, right before that camp started, we had a miscarriage, and it was, it was terrible. Like, experiencing something like that is, you know, I wouldn't wish that on anyone, but it's a lot more common than most people expect. And so that was like, it was really, really, like, really, really rough. It was, no, it wasn't even, it was
right.
The day after, it was during camp. It was the day after the Hall of Fame game. Played in the Hall of Fame game. We had our first trimester appointment the next day. And that happened, and it was, you know, it was a huge blow. And, like, I mean, I was emotionally kind of everywhere during camp. But, like, I thought I did my thing. And then to, like, get cut, it was just, like, another, like, hit to the stomach. Like, damn. But it was nice to spend a little bit of time. I mean, it was literally, like, my fiance was out in St. Louis with her family. You know, spent, like, a couple of days,
right.
And then the Lions club and went to Detroit. So, I mean, it was more of, like, a... I don't know. Arizona was home, and then that happened. I knew it was the nature of the beast, and I didn't really, like, you know, it is what it is.
Right. So you were saying that you were doing flipping houses during college. So at this point, like, after your first season, where were you at in, like, the real estate game?
So as soon as the rookie year ended, I bought a fourplex in North Phoenix. So, like, during the season, I was living with one of my teammates and then was renting for, like, $2,000 a month for, like, 2-3 months. And I'm like, I'm not about to spend $24,000 this year on rent, on air, essentially. So I bought a fourplex,
right.
And lived in one unit and rented out the other three and essentially lived for free. I cash flowed a little bit, actually, while living there. And it was awesome because
right.
It also was going to set me up and protect me for inevitably when I got cut, because I had a little brother as well who he's in the CFL now, but he played in the NFL for like 2-3 years. And he was, when he was on the Oakland Raiders, he had gotten drafted to the Raiders sixth round in like 2015. And when he got cut, he was still locked in for like another 6 months on like a lease where he's paying almost like $2,500-$3,000 a month. And like watching that $18,000 go to air, I was like, that's not about to happen to me. So it set me up. As soon as
right.
I got cut, I left all my furniture there, and then my manager Airbnb'd the unit I lived in. That unit itself made double than what it would have made for rent. It was looking ahead and knowing that you're going to get cut probably at some point, but it was an easy way to get into real estate with no barrier to entry. I mean, I only came out of pocket $13,000 on a $268,000 apartment building.
So you get the call to Detroit. You end up having to switch over to Detroit. Did you end up buying a house there, or was it like the same thing? Did you get a complex?
I got a duplex, actually, in Allen Park. Me and my fiance, we lived downstairs, and we Airbnb'd upstairs. You know, our mortgage was $1,000 a month. We brought in about $1,400 a month. So lived for free. I bought that like in October, like right when I got there. It was the week that the Cardinals tried to take me off of Detroit's practice squad was the week that I closed on my duplex.
So that first season in Detroit, you know, you spent most of it on the practice squad. What's something that like most people don't know about being on the practice squad? Like practice time and like what's like different than being from like a regular player?
I mean, from a practice squad to an active player, what most people don't do.
Yeah, to an active player.
Pretty much the same thing. And no matter what, you do every exact same thing that everybody else on the team does. You go to the same meetings, you do the same BS, you do the same everything. And then depending on the club, on game day, you're either on the sideline, you're either in the suite, or you get to watch from home, or you travel with the team, or you get to stay home for the weekend. But everything else is, and you lift a little bit different. You lift like kind of back like when you're in college, whereas when you're active, you're not really crushing it on the weights mid-season. That's probably about it. You condition on Saturdays when the other team has, you know, walkthroughs. You're doing conditioning to get that, you know, because you're not going to be playing the game and keep that just conditioning. That's really it. Besides that, you're
right.
Taking tests before the weekend, the night before the game. It depends. It's a club by club thing.
Right. So, what was the difference from year one and year two in Detroit?
One is that, you know, coaching staff change. Was a big change.
Big
difference. Absolutely. Hold on, you might be breaking up. I can't hear anything if you're saying something.
Oh. Hang on 1 second. There we go.
Okay.
All right, we're good. Okay, so that first year, a big change. What was like, you know, you had a really, really solid preseason that second year in Detroit. I think it was like going into the Green Bay game, there was players hurt, a bunch of players hurt, secondary hurt. Detroit ends up, you know, moving on at that point. What was going through your head? Was it like, okay, am I going to retire at this point? Or was there like still the football mindset there? And then, you know, you end up getting the call from New York. So what was that all like?
You talking about when I got cut from Detroit?
Yeah, for sure.
It was, honestly, it was awesome when I got cut. When you think about from the perspective of most football players or NFL players, they've never really got to experience a true Thanksgiving. So I got cut like a week or two right before Thanksgiving. And, Lions obviously play in the Thanksgiving game or anywhere else. You know, if I was anywhere else, I'd be in another city and not be really close to my family per se. So being cut during Thanksgiving, like my family rented like a Sprinter van, came up to Michigan. I Airbnb'd like a big house on like one of the lakes up in Bloomfield. And we had an awesome Thanksgiving, like my entire family together. I proposed to my fiance that weekend. It was a beautiful thing. So it was honestly awesome. And it was, you know, break from.
You don't hear that often.
Oh, yeah. And again, most people aren't in this situation, too. Most people, when you define yourself by football, and you lose it, then
right.
It's just, you know, more of a crappy feeling. When it was me, it was like, all right, this is cool. I get to breathe for a little bit and hang out with my family, and just in terms of just perspective. And then get signed to go back to Jersey. It was like coming home. It couldn't have been even, it was even better. I was like, damn. So when I got signed to the Giants, it's kind of crazy. Like, I was literally in Arizona to work out. I was there to work out for them, like in like with their scouting people, with like three or four other people about to work out, going, not even working out yet, literally going, like, and you go, when you're about to work out for a team, you go to all the different, if they don't have everything in house, you got to go to the orthopedic, you got to go to the hospital and get your EKG, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's just a whole BS regardless.
Yeah, big process.
I was in the middle of doing all that, and I had a workout tomorrow, like the next day. But at that time, the Giants had actually called and wanted to sign me on their practice squad, like right then and there. And the Cardinals workout was a practice squad workout anyway. And it was cool being back in Arizona and all that. Like, yeah, warm. Like, that's, you know, I love Arizona. But coming,
right.
It was like dope. It was dope. Like, just getting to come home, like in terms of just Jersey and like all my friends and just family is. It was cool to end my career back home, although I'm a diehard Eagles fan.
So what all went into retirement?
It honestly came down to, like, one, just perspective. Having a daughter and having a child now puts everything in perspective, and I can't imagine, you know, I just thinking from like different, like by one of my really, really great teammates, Don Muehlbach, for example. He's been playing for 15 years. I can't remember how many kids he has, but he's missed every single one of their first steps, and like, that sucks. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, from the perspective of football, during football season, I mean, you're up 6, 7 a.m., you're not getting back till 4 or 5 p.m. What's that leave? An hour, 2 hours maybe with your baby? And then what about your wife? And then what about what you're actually passionate about, which is real estate? It comes down to just time and what are you passionate about. Like, football became like, am I doing this for me, or am I doing it because everybody else thinks that you should be in the NFL because you play in the NFL, and because, oh, it's so much money, why would you leave that on the table? It really comes down to really just perspective. And like, every off season, I would literally, when the season ended, I would put my foot on the gas, real estate-wise, going city to city, looking at the different markets that I wanted to invest in, raising capital, meeting with property managers, meeting with brokers, just going all over, just hitting the gas. And then as soon as April hits for OTAs, it's you got to stop. Like, you got to, you're working out like crazy now, so now you got to get your naps in during the day. Your mind just flips to complete football mode. You got to consume all of that stuff. And it's like, it really doesn't leave no time for you to just to be yourself or be what you're passionate about. And it's almost like it's a huge gap in terms of, like, you're just, you're wasting, I wouldn't say it's a waste of time, but it's, in my perspective, it was a lot of time being wasted and time that could have been used way more usefully, just in the sense of what I'm passionate about, and now having a child as well, which is, you know, one of the most important parts of my life. I can't be the real estate investor I want to be, the professional speaker that I want to be, and the father that I want to be, and be an NFL player. I could do it, but it's not. I'm not going to be. It'd be me doing it because everybody thinks I should be a football player. When in reality, that's not. I don't define myself by football, so it doesn't. There's no. It was an easy decision.
Tell you what, that motivational speaking and speaking gig you're gonna be doing, gonna be great at it, man. You're awesome. I appreciate you jumping on here. I got one more question left, and then we gotta end this. And it's about your trip that you went on to Haiti. I kind of read about it a little bit. It's probably something that's kind of probably almost tough to talk about, but can you just kind of take us through the entire story and as we wrap this up?
Yeah, man. So when I finished my senior year going into my fifth year, it was about 2-3 days after graduation, me, my mom, my dad, my grandma, we went on a missionary trip to Haiti, to give out medicine at different churches and orphanages across the country. We brought a bunch of nurses from Villanova as well. And it was beautiful. You know, I'm Haitian, so it was dope getting to actually see the real Haiti. Like, I've been on a cruise on Royal Caribbean and seen Haiti, but, like, that's fake Haiti. Like, there's a big 12-foot wall that blocks off the rest of the actual island from this private Royal Caribbean island. It's bullshit, in my opinion. But seeing real Haiti and being really ingrained to my roots and my culture, it was the most beautiful week of my life. And then May 29th, 2015, in the middle of the night, we're playing spades, and all of a sudden you hear a loud bang, and my instant reaction was I froze, and I thought it was, you ever seen those electric fly swatters?
I haven't, but I can picture it.
Yeah, it looks like a tennis racket. It makes like a
sound,
and we were using those all week because there's a whole bunch of bugs out there. My natural reaction was, why is somebody hitting bugs at 2:30 in the morning? And then all of a sudden, you see a boot kick through the front door, and then 8 people rush into the compound behind that boot. And that guy who just shot him on the floor below it, there was a girl next to us, and she had a shawl on, and they ripped the shawl into pieces and then hog-tied us. So hands tied behind your back, and then ankles tied, and then hands tied to your feet, and then blindfolded. And, like, you know, at that point, I thought, it was honestly it. I came peace to the fact that we were going to die. I was thankful that my little brother wasn't there and that he had just gotten drafted and was going to, you know, live on to live out his dream. And they went, you know, room to room stealing everything. They punched one lady in the face. They tried to rape another lady and failed. Tied up all the men, women. They stacked themselves on top of each other in the bathtub. And then there was a pastor who was staying with us who, if you didn't know there was a bedroom back there, you would have never looked. And he was hiding under the bed. If he calls the police saying, send help, we're under attack. The police say, what neighborhood are you in? Oh, yeah, no shot. We can't come out there. And hang up. And then he calls the next door neighbor saying, go outside with your gun and just empty the clip out into the air. Like, we're under attack. So from my perspective, I don't even speak Creole, so I can't understand anything that these people are saying. I'm just yelling, missionary, missionary. And all of a sudden you hear, like, an entire clip being emptied into the air right outside the house. So I'm thinking the country's under attack. I don't know what's happening, honestly. And, like, the area we were in anyway was a war zone. I mean, it looked like the earthquake just had 3 or 4 habitable houses on the street. And they hear the gunshots. And at that point, we had thought they had scurried off. And my dad, he had untied himself, comes out. And from his perspective, I mean, I was sleeping in the room with him in that bedroom, him hearing gunshots and then hearing his son screaming. I can't imagine it being even just from his perspective. So he comes out and starts to untie me. Well, closes the steel door, puts the deadbolt in, starts to untie me, and then you hear a loud doom, 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 doom at the door. It was the bandits again. So we had thought they left, but on our compound, we had also had like another separate building that had our medical supplies. Because we set up like a mobile clinic right on our compound as well. So they were in there trying to look for medicine and things like that. And so they're banging on the door again, doof, doof, doof. And like we're all trying to be quiet because we think we're safe because the door is closed now, the deadbolt's in. All of a sudden, then they start shooting out the windows. So there's bullets flying through the house. My dad's like, okay. And opens up the door for them. They tie him back up, throw him on top of me, and go through the house again. And the pastor at that time, so he had done the prayer that morning at the prime minister's office. He called the prime minister himself, telling me, and we're under attack and we need help. So then you finally, in the distance, you hear sirens, and the bandits,